And I think our guys had their cool. When the fence was pushed over, yeah, I think that is not part of the plan, the excitement about being part of the unit. We, I don't think there's anything that we need to be serving as a personality. He was part of the parliamentary team and he went back to the charge of the reporter there. I don't know whether he's still there, but I'm sure he's still there. We have two presentations today. It is Starfire Manduki Annual Report. And I think I'll now head over to the team.
Thank you, Professor Mayashula, and thank you to the Portfolio Committee for giving us this opportunity. We have two opportunities in the year. One is to come and present our annual report, and the other is to look at our budget. I'm pleased to report that in this year we're going to try and focus on achievements, challenges, and the way forward. And in terms of the achievements, we're going to highlight the kind of areas where we believe that we're responsive to national priorities. We registered three national certificates, the vocational qualifications at NQF level 2, 3, and 4. And that supports the Department of Education's recapitalization plan for the FET colleges. And so these certificates will replace the N courses that are being phased out. We've registered qualifications for professionalized public service as a result of a joint implementation plan with the DPSA. And we also work very closely with SUNDI. So as the SUNDI puts in place a strategy to upgrade all the civil servants and their qualifications, and remember, SUNDI is not about getting more qualifications for civil servants, it's about how do you improve service delivery, and so we are there supporting them with qualifications where and when it's necessary. The scarce and critical skills. Gypsy has highlighted a whole number of areas. Two particular areas is the artisan pipeline and the engineering pipeline. And we work very closely with the review and revision of trade qualifications in the manufacturing and engineering sector. And I think it's very important to note that under the Department of Labor, the whole artisan career path is being relooked at, and we are very involved in that particular process. We've heard a lot about welding and whether our welders are able to meet international standards, and we've registered internationally comparable qualifications in welding, and that carries the support of the welding organizations, the standard setting in terms of quality of welding as opposed to quality of education and training certificates. And we participate very actively in the GIPSA technical working group, and we've made a lot of input on the oxygen pipeline, the engineering pipeline, as well as the National Education and Skills Database, which I will pick up again a bit later when I talk about our National Learner Records Database. We have in your pack that you have, you'll find is a CD. That CD gives us the second analysis of trends in public higher education in South Africa, 1995 to 2004. And this information is based on the National Learner Records Database. SACWA is the custodian of the National Learner Records Database. It is a database that can capture 30 million individual learners, and at the moment we have 7.5 million learners captured on that database, and we've got a full record of public higher education, and we have done an analysis, and if you use the CD that's been given to you, you'll find there's a lot of analysis there, and we'll highlight one or two. This report was launched by the Minister of Education, and our database is now being looked at by the GIPSA task team as the national database for education and skills, because our database is recognized as being one at the forefront of databases that capture this kind of information. In the report, there are 54 work-related fields of study grouped into 5 broad fields, and the trend is per field of study, qualification type and level, population group and gender, and there's an analysis of the South African schools in the same category. So, for example, if you wanted to know how many female engineers qualified, you can get it from this trend report. And the benefit of this is obvious to the labor market and educational analysis and decision making, for employment equity planning and for academic planning. And it's interesting to note that when you actually just look at, this is just a taster as it were, you can see that the largest average annual growth was in business and management science, the lowest average annual growth is in social sciences and humanities, and the second lowest is in engineering, sciences and technology. And again, this again is evidence of some of the issues that we are aware of, but we are tracking these trends. A new development which we'll report on in the next cycle is that SACWA and the THE have entered into a memorandum of understanding where we will start to collect all the information for them for private higher education and training, and then we'll have a complete picture of what's happening in the higher education and training sector. In terms of research, we are building SACWA's research capacity to provide intellectual leadership. Professor Ben Parker has been employed as the director for research, and we've started to look at what impact are we having, particularly on areas that didn't have qualifications before. And in your pack, you will see this publication. It's the uptake and impact of qualifications and unit standards in the subfield early childhood development. So having put qualifications out in an area where there were formerly not many qualifications, especially for people running creches and establishments like that, now we have not only put qualifications into that sector, but we've now gone to look to see what is happening. And again, if you look very carefully at this report again highlights the importance of getting information. The researchers who did that will report that sometimes getting the information on and quantity is an issue. There's lots of things happening, but the record keeping and the keeping of the necessary information, that in this case it goes to the ETTP teacher and then to SACWA. And so from the level of the provider to the EDTP seater to check work, and it's the breakdown between the provider and the EDTP seater, and so the information can't get onto the NLRG. So again, it's important that one is having not only doing things, one is also evaluating as to what is happening. We're doing research on the recognition of prior learning in conjunction with the OECD, but more importantly, in the next cycle, we will be doing some more detailed work, because what is happening in South Africa, everybody talks about RPL, but the actual practice of RPL remains an issue. And while SACWA is not an implementing agency for RPL, it has to encourage providers to in fact have a practice of RPL. And so again, doing work with the OECD, we again see that at the conceptual level, South Africa is at the cutting edge. Our problem is how do you put it into practice? And I could speak a very long time on this issue of the recognition of prior learning, but there are some types of good practice in our country, but it's far too few for what we are trying to do in South Africa. In terms of strategic advocacy, there are lots of publications, the SACWA Update and Bulletin, both of which are in your pack, so you get an idea of what we're putting out. We try and speak to the general public through the Engineering News, the Business Brief, the CEO Magazine, and the Government Digest, and we try and make sure that people are aware of what it is that the NQF is all about. We also, those that are interested in e-government will know that if you look at international conferences, then the notion of e-learning is very important. But what people don't often know is the use of e-learning for systems change. So normally the process is if you've got a new system coming in, you train the trainer and you have a cascading model of the training. What e-learning and system change does is you put the very best material and you make it available via an e-learning platform. But our NQF support link does that, but more importantly, it doesn't depend on people having access to fast internet. They can do it via broadband internet, they can do it via CD-ROM, but they can also do it in the old correspondence mode, paper, whatnot. So our NQF support link encourages people to become experts on matters of the NQF, and they can even get credit if they do the assessment. So we have this our website, but more importantly, we have an agreement with eDegree, and they offer it as a learning program to people that want to get the credit for it. So we have the best of both worlds. You can get it free on the SACWA gateway, you can enroll for a program via eDegree, and you have the material, the very best material, available in paper, in CD-ROM, and on the internet. And of course, we have a fully updated website and the NQF gateway, which allows you, if you can come through the gateway, you can get to other places that you want to get, like the Department of Education and CHE and places like that. There's a big debate in South Africa about professional qualification and professional designation. We've done a very extensive research report on that. We established a review panel consisting of the professional bodies, both statutory and non-statutory. We had a consultative workshop with all the delegates of that sector, and the authority will come to an end this Friday. Our third authority term of office ends on Friday, and we will have the fourth authority being announced by the minister very, very shortly. And we hope that the new authority will finalize the recommendation that came out of that research. Essentially, the research was showing us that professional qualifications should be registered on the National Qualifications Framework, but there is a debate around professional designations. Professional designations like the CASA for Chartered Accountants at the moment is registered on the NQF. It's a very valuable qualification, but it is a qualification that can be revoked by the professional body. And there is a big debate about how we take it forward. There is obviously an importance about keeping the qualification on the NQF, but there are a whole lot of smaller non-statutory professional bodies, and what you want to do is to have a kind of level playing field so that the NQF objective of access is very important. You don't want unnecessary gatekeepers in the system. So it's an issue about quality and it's an issue about access. Then we did a very important research report for the Commonwealth Secretariat with support from the Department of Education. This is the report. It's about the recognition of teacher qualifications and professional registration status across Commonwealth member states. A very successful meeting was held, chaired by the DG of Education, Duncan Hindle, and this report was published for the Commonwealth Council of Education Ministers that was held in Cape Town in December last year, and the recommendations that came out of the meeting on the 28th to the 29th based on this report was accepted by the Commonwealth Ministers of Education. So again, we've been asked to do follow-up work on this with the Department of Education, and we're busy doing this. I think this is very important when you have the mobility of teachers across the Commonwealth, and so at the one level, it's a very important study, but it also has political implications about as people migrate from one country to another, and if you're a developing country and you lose your teachers, what is that doing to your development? So there are important questions that one has to face in this, and this report starts to help to at least look at what is happening in terms of the way qualifications are recognized across the Commonwealth. Then we have the NQF colloquium every year. Last year we had the NQF as a socially inclusive and cohesive system. We had people from Scotland, from SACWA, from the Department of Education, University of Stellenbosch, and Wits University. And again, it is this intellectual scrutiny around what we're doing that is incredibly important. And very often, just as the rugby is uniting South Africa in ways that sociologists will take a long time to understand how it did it, in the same way, the NQF is an important building block of our democracy, and we don't often recognize it as such, but the issues of access, quality, redress, and development is there, and one has to work at it kind of quietly and ensure that we remember that the NQF is about having an education and training system that talks about social inclusion and cohesiveness. We have international liaison with the European Qualifications Framework. We have a lot of work in SADC. Yesterday we had a delegation from Kenya in our offices. We've had Sudan, although they're not part of the SADC, but we are a home for all the NEPAD members. They come and find out about education and training and push the NQF systems. We've assisted the Seychelles Qualification Authority, the Mauritian Qualifications Authority, and there were 9 international delegations that visited South Africa in the year under review. One of our jobs that we've got is the evaluation of foreign qualifications, and all that we want to show the portfolio committee is that if you look at the preceding 3 years, we had 6,300, 8,400, and the year under review was 14,400. and all of a sudden we are getting 140 applications per day into our offices. And again, this Mr. Trudeau from the department in the finance will know that our income in terms of the evaluation of foreign qualifications, we charge a fee for that, and that income obviously has increased with a number of applications, but we've also had to increase our staff base to be able to deal with that increase. There was a 71% increase in applications. We have developed a trend report of persons with foreign qualifications entering South Africa. The top seven countries, no prizes for guessing: Zimbabwe, India, DRC, Nigeria, UK, Lesotho, and the People's Republic of China. So that's where the applications are coming from. These are people that are either coming to work in South Africa or coming to study in South Africa. So those are an important trend to watch. In terms of quality assurance, we have moved from monitoring compliance auditing to performance auditing of ETQA, and the last count that I had was that there were 7 ETQAs that have submitted for performance auditing, and we are carried out targeted monitoring interventions in high-risk areas such as firearms and driver training. If you look at the number of accidents we have with trucks and the issues around firearms, we monitor that very carefully. You can't own a firearm unless you pass the unit standards for training in the use of firearms. In terms of people development, we have a staff performance and recognition program. We have a fully implemented training and development program for all our staff, and we again have retained the Investor in People standard. This is a UK standard. We don't have a South African standard yet. This is not an education and training standard. It is a performance standard in terms of human resource development, and we have ours for 2009. And we have, as an incentive to keep our staff, implemented broadbanding across the whole organization. In terms of employment equity, our targets were aligned with the latest census on the economically active population. Overall, we meet our targets. However, we are exceeded targets in respect of white females. I will put up a slide that will show you that. SACWA focuses on skill development for all employees to ensure effective delivery of the mandate. And on page 51 of our annual report, you will see the status of our employment equity. And there's a very detailed report that is there. And if you look at the variance column, which is the second last column, you will see that it's the area, our target for white females is 14%. At present, we have 22.3%. And that's the only big number that you see in the variance column. Our board has looked at that, and our board has said that given the constraints that we work under, that we will live with that, and we will try to work that out of the system over a longer period of time. But overall, our situation is good, and I think we've even increased in the 4% target for people with disabilities. We're on about 2%, so I think we're moving in the right direction even on that score. In terms of information technology, we have a very sophisticated IT backbone, and again we try and use IT as a smart solution. IT is normally expensive, as you all know. We've been able to curtail our costs, but it's an area that issues like disaster recovery is very important, risk management with computer systems, and I'm pleased to report that our audit committee is very happy with the level of security that we have in place. When we look at the summary of the budget expenditure per program, that we can find on 71 of the annual report. And again, I think I just want to take you through the budget was 65 million. We spent 57 million, and so there was a surplus of 8.6. And again, on our annual report, we explain why that was so. We spent 87% of our budget. 7% or 4.5% was budget for the parking garage and repairs to the west facade of our building. There was a crack on the west facade that had to be repaired. The work was almost finished in that year, but we only paid in the next financial year. So there was a million rand of the west facade. The parking garage that is almost finished built now was only started late in that year, and there were no payments made, so that money had to be rolled over, so that was the 4.5 million. We had an underspend of 6%. The underspending was partially due to savings that were made in some areas, and Treasury has approved the rollover of these funds. And then for the 10th year running, since our inception, we have got a clean audit report, of which we are very proud at SACWA, that we have a clean bill of health since we started. The challenges that we have faced is the NQF review process. I'm pleased to announce that we have been given a copy of a joint policy statement by the Ministers of Education and Labour. That process now seems to be complete at the National Skills Conference held on Thursday and Friday last week by the Department of Labour. They handed out that report as discussion paper 6, and in terms of that there are going to be some changes. The standards setting and quality assurance processes move to 3 qualifications and quality assurance councils, 2 of which are already existing. The one, Umaruti, that will report later for general and further education and training, the CHE for higher education, but one new QC, which is coming into being, which is called the QCCO. It's a qualifications and quality assurance council for trades and occupations. And that's a new one, and that body will in fact have the 23 seaters and some non-statutory bodies reporting to it. Now, I think putting all of this together is a challenge because it means that some functions will move, the 2 new functions for Umaruti and for the CHE standard setting, they would have to put up systems to do that. And the QCCO has to start off from scratch. And how quickly all of this can be done in a way that doesn't destabilize the system and create some new gremlins is said to be important. We have been working with the Department of Labor very closely with the setting up of the QCCO, and we will work with the other 2 QCs to make sure that there is a smooth transfer. I think our relationship with all the key players in education and training is dramatically improved. We've had a number of discussions with Umaruti around the importance of curriculum. We're waiting to finalize that arrangement. We have worked with the CHE, and I've reported earlier that we signed a memorandum of understanding for 3 million over 3 years to get the information for private higher education. I remain a member of the Council on Higher Education, and I sit on the National Skills Authority, and in terms of the new joint policy statement, the three QCs will have representation on SACWA, and SACWA will have representation on the three QCs and the NSA, as is presently the case. So again, I think we have the basis of a fairly tight network organization, so the issues of coherence can be better dealt with. The way forward, the changing landscape of education and training, I've given you some feeling of that, the involvement with the three QCs, and the big issue of transitional arrangement is important. Our contact details are there for you, so that if you need to get onto the website or the gateway and how to get hold of us by telephone and fax. Thank you, Chairperson. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. I open it now to your members of the committee. Welcome, Anas Bernamo from Italy.
Thank you, Chairperson. What I would love to understand from you is that you actually gave a certificate to people who are internationally comparable in terms of well-being. Now, I want to know how spread is this testing and certification. Because in some cases you may find that it's only concentrating in certain areas. Do you really let people in the deep rural areas also benefit out of this? And the other question is, are the qualifications from teachers in countries such as Zimbabwe, Malawi, Mozambique, and Nigeria recognized in South Africa? Can those people be employed as teachers in our country? The third one is not a question as such, but I just want to find out if you can spend so much money in renovating this building that you're occupying. I would guess they belong to you, they are not rented. Thank you.
Thank you, Ken. Compliment for wonderful presentation, and in particular the issue of unqualified what is happening most is the issue of law research on the cognition of higher learning in conjunction with the OECD. But in a transforming society, this is definitely key. Internal evaluations of our students, foreigners who come to our country, this is then, and also to look for job placing. What worries me about this matter is that that right at matric level, when these kids have got to move to institutions of higher learning, maybe away, but most of these former so-called privileged universities, they use credit. Simple boils down that the child must have more B's and A's than B's and D's. Never for their children, even though the poor resource base of their schools and so on. But it also feels happy when people want to do postgraduate work coming from colleagues, disadvantaged universities and so on. I would just like to know what criteria, what are the frameworks of doing this research? It is not easy to say now to feel that that's a guideline, because now these youngsters, they keep on coming to us because they believe that the endorsement entitles them to move on. it's easier to explain in certain areas like engineering and so on. But if a kid has got a B in those areas, math, physical science, you know, other related things, you find that that's, you know, 28 aggregate, or that, you know, credit does not come through if the performance, say, in languages is average or mediocre. Because to me, if a child wants to study engineering, why does he need a distinction in Zulu or Swahili to make up those 28, you know, credits as well? Thank you.
Thank you, sir. My questions will cover three broad areas. First one is on page 9 on the following qualification, where Zimbabwe is number one. You don't know whether it's in order of the... I don't know whether in your report you do have a breakdown of for those students, whether how many for applications for to come and work, and those who are applying as what to come and study. That would be interesting, especially for the one. That's one. And two, concerning this focus quality, they keep on appearing. I think it was last week where a number of people had applied to a nursing college, but the man just disappeared. Lots of money. Do you have in your database, that would be helpful, all the registered colleges, genuine registered colleges, so that students who are applying not fall under the focus college. And the last one is the MBA qualification. I don't know whether the last time we were here, you did brief us on there was some time ago a debate on the not so authentic MBA qualification. I would like to have just a short review from your part on the setup of our MBA qualification.
Okay, I think this of the sponsors, otherwise one might forget the kind of context in which questions were asked. The issue about welders, the fact that we have qualifications that are registered that are internationally comparable means that whoever is offering welding training, for example, if that is offered at an FET college, they will be meeting a standard which is internationally comparable. Unfortunately, and I'll pick up this point in a number of other places, the social practices around the recognition of qualification is quite mind-boggling. Let me just give you an idea. About 20 years ago, if you were mainly white then, and if you were a person who qualified with a Section 28 under the old Manpower Training Act, and you became an artisan, you were an artisan. Okay. So if you went to Willie Funston Train, as it was then called, now in Lela, and you passed your trade test, you were an artisan. Come 2006, 2007, you go to the same place, you pass your trade test, and some places in the mining industry will not accept you as a qualified artisan. Okay. And the point about it is, I'm not saying people might have very good reasons why they don't want to, but we can't have a situation where you have a high-stakes test, and then it doesn't have the credibility that allows the person in.
And there are a whole number of these kinds of social practices. So, coming back to welding now, if you, there's a big job, Sasol is going to re-engineer or go down for a maintenance period, they have a program where they test their welders before you're allowed on the site. So even though you say, I'm a qualified welder, I'm a coded welder, here are my papers, they have another, their own test before you're allowed on. And so it's these kind of practices that in fact start to undermine processes. And so what we need to make sure about is that we have standards that are being diligently applied. And so when somebody comes out of a school with a certificate that we know this means something, if they go to an FET college and they have a certificate, it means something in the system. And that credit worthiness is what we need to negotiate. But there's another curve ball, if you like. People set up businesses. So, for example, we start off by saying, we can't trust your qualifications, so therefore we must have a test for you. Somebody makes a business out of that. And so it's in their interest then to, as it were, almost de-credit or discredit other qualifications and say, you need to be retested. And so, and if you look, I mean, one of the issues that I have every so often you see in the newspapers, you can't trust South African certificates because there's so much fraud around and all of that. Underneath all of that is a business practice which says if we can get a government department to check everybody's qualifications, people make millions of rands out of it. And so what we need to do is to build a society where someone comes forward with a certificate that there is a great degree of creditworthiness about that certificate. So the question about are these welding qualifications available in rural areas, the question would be where is your nearest FET college and are they offering it? And then what we need to do is to make sure that FET college is working very well with these other agencies to make sure that the standards there are then recognized. The issue of teachers coming from other countries, yes, South Africa does recognize that. The role of our Center for the Evaluation of Foreign Qualifications, we would give an evaluation of the value of that certificate. But we can't influence the people who are going to employ those teachers. And so, for example, a person might have a valid qualification, but in a provincial department of education or a private school that wants to take people on board, they will look at that person and that qualification in a particular way. Normally, people will not employ somebody to be a teacher unless they've had their certificate evaluated in this kind of way. And just to give you an example, in South Africa, you can go to one of our own universities and get an adult education qualification, but our education department will not regard that as a qualification for teaching. Okay, you need to get a what they would call a teacher certificate, a PGSC or the old HDE or whatever. So again, sometimes people have problems, and it's not that they're not a qualified teacher, it's also what the employers of teachers require. Our building is, we bought our building when Hatfield was going downhill, and we bought a building for 5.4 million. The building is worth about 30 million. And the repair that we did was on the west wall was R1 million, and we were short of parking, and so the parking garage. So the state we made a profit for the state in terms of that. Research into RPL is a difficult issue because it comes up in all kinds of debates. The real issue about RPL is how people present their evidence and against what that evidence these measures. And to put it very simply, the problem is if someone's been an artisan and they've gone through a 3-year apprenticeship and somebody comes in and they've got workplace experience, there is a reluctance of the artisan group to allow somebody to come in a way which is seen as kind of easier. In the same way when universities apply RPL, they may say, we look at your experience and what you've done, we'll allow you onto a master's program, but they don't give you an honors degree. So the way in which RPL gets used in different places is quite important. And the work that we're going to do this year, I think, is very exciting because we will be working to look at some of those social practices and which are the areas in which we can develop practices that can take people through. The best example of RPL practice is the building industry. The construction sector had a program which was funded by the European Union, and what they did is they took people that were semi-skilled, they evaluated them and said, what are these people capable of doing, what do they know, and what must they still learn to become a qualified artisan. So you had the evaluation, you then had training for them to make up the gap, and people became qualified artisans in that particular kind of way. It seemed that in that particular process, while it was money from the EU, the process ran. When the EU money was over, the process stopped. So again, it looks at the issues of incentive, but there was a very good example of RPL practice. The issue about credits and the 28 credits, I think that's the Swedish system that universities judge people to come onto their program. Now, I think that we live in a society where there's academic freedom of autonomy. So universities decide who they will take on board. Our real difficulty, and I think the Department of Education has seen this, and that's why in this joint policy statement they talk about credit accumulation and transfer. What we can't have is a situation where somebody wants to move from one university, they've got economics one, and they want to move to another university to do economics two. And people then start to say, but you know, our standard of economics one is higher, so you can't come and do economics two with us. You have to go back and do economics one. Now that used to happen quite regularly with chartered accountants. You finish a BCom degree at one of the universities, and then you want to become a chartered accountant, then the profession didn't recognize the BCom from that particular university, and then you have to go to the old Randafrikaans University or BIT, and then you have to go back then to, if you're lucky, to do 3 subjects of your final year, or in some cases the whole of your final year before you were allowed to on that career path. So one of the things that we want to work with the CHE in is to ensure that those kinds of articulation that happens between universities should happen, and that our standards shouldn't be so diverse across our system. The foreign qualifications and SEEK, the Zimbabweans are the biggest, with 13% of our applications come from Zimbabweans. The problem started that when we were doing this evaluation, we didn't ask questions like, are you coming to study? Is this for permanent refugee status? Is this for that? We're now asking those questions, and in future we'll be able to give you some of those to the answers. So at the moment we can only tell you it's 13% of Zimbabweans. Why they're wanting to come here, they haven't declared. And so we are now asking applicants for some of those questions, and hopefully get those answers. The issue with bogus qualifications, we know that to be registered as a private provider, you have to be registered by the Department of Education. The Department of Education has a website. You can come through our gateway and you can get onto the website. But SACWA also has a list of the accredited providers, so you can get it, and we do have a service
to people phoning in to find out whether a particular provider is accredited and registered, and we do assist learners in that process. The problem with it is that our people want to have their children educated, and when the children are turned away from our institution, they look for the next best thing. And that is why if there's a college that opens its door somewhere in IT or nursing or even teaching, they push their kids there and they pay big sums of money. And I think that we need to have a crackdown. And I think that it's not TACWA's responsibility to crack down on these institutions, but it's something that we would have to be working with the Department of Education to try and check how they can actually close down these bogus institutions. The MBA qualification, finally, the CHE did a very good review of the MBA qualifications. There is a report that they have available on the MBA qualifications, and there were a number of institutions, public institutions and private, that the MBA programs were closed. And that was done with the endorsement of TACWA.
Professor, I also thank the Council for this presentation. Mine is just your review panel. You made mention of the fact that we have professional bodies. You could just mention a few of them for the sake of information. And also, I went through some part of your annual report here. And I just want to indicate that I made an observation with regard to attendance of meetings. I know that you were telling. Your various committee meetings, according to my own observation, a bit poorly attended. If one takes into consideration that some members of the various council represent institutions, then I don't know whether I was wrong to say that perhaps if you are misrepresenting
comment about it. You have to take a comment.
On this professional panel, we have Professor Yu Hanaran, who represented the Engineering Council of South Africa. We had someone from the Nursing Council. We had Chris de Villiers from the Chartered Institute of Secretary. There was about seven people, and those are the ones that I can remember immediately, and I can let you have a list of the names of the other panelists. So they were from the recognized body, and the African Institute of Chartered Accountants, Graham Kelly was also a member. In terms of the EXCO meetings and the people who were going to attend, if you look on page 58, you will see that there are kind of particular reasons why things happen. In terms of Mr. Giba, I think Mr. Giba and his union had some difficulties, and in fact we have not been able to trace Mr. Giba for the past 4 months. So there's a particular issue, and Mr. de Klerk, for example, had a son who was seriously ill, and he normally is a person that attends fairly regularly. You'll see the business component between Hall and Mabena, they attended 7 out of the 8 meetings. You'll see that myself and Joe Samuels, we attended 8 out of the 8. When I couldn't be at the one meeting, Joe represented me there. The Department of Labor was Mr. Phineas Mutibi and Mr. Mike Tony. They attended 5 out of the 8. The next group attended 8 out of the 8 because the alternative was there. And then the Department of Education, Ms. Penny Vinneveld and Dr. Malafa Cordera, they attended 1 out of the 8. One has to be very diplomatic when one says things like this, because one is not. One knows that departmental officials have all kinds of responsibilities, and I think sometimes their attendance at meetings like this becomes an issue. And I think we must find a better way. At the moment, the way SACWA is constituted, the two departments form a critical part of the EXCO, and I think we must find a way of trying to free our colleagues in the two departments from actually attending, because I think it puts a tremendous onus on them. And if you look at the size of our documents that we sometimes send to people, then it is a burden. And also, if you look at the next one, is Marietta van Rooyen and Mr. Dan in Corsi. They attended 6 out of the 8 meetings. Annabelle Giera was, she's a chartered accountant in the firm Grant Thornton, and she also serves on our audit committee, and she serves on the main board. And at one time in her company, she was asked to do more duty, and she was going to resign from SACWA. And she was spoken to by the chair, and the compromise was made that she would not attend the EXCO meeting. And so, again, there was a reason for that. And our chairperson, who is a wonderful chairperson and attends every meeting, she was seriously ill last year, and she was off for almost 5 months. And in that period, Mr. Ken Hall stood in for her. So that's the reason why we see she only attended 4 out of the 8 meetings. So I think it is a challenge to keep the meetings for late, but so far we've been able to in fact do that. The entry of colloquium, the answer there is a very simple one. We look at people who have published in the area of this kind of social cohesion and inclusion, and then we try and find the best people that were there. So this was not taken on the basis of the institution. And in fact, I thought that on my slide I had that 10 Parker, Ben Parker, and Ken Harley. They, in fact, Ken was working for a long time for the PhD, and Ben is now working at SACWIP, but before that, he was, in fact, working for the CETD, and he had already left the Brazilian Natal. So it was based on the individuals working in a particular area and not based on where they actually came from. And you see, that's the importance of communication. When you communicate in a way that they're from these places, it's almost like these places are being given preferential treatment. And in a case like this, it was the individual. We will certainly keep the portfolio committee informed on RPL, and I think we will arrange with the chair to have to make the documentation available as they become available, and also to brief the portfolio committee, especially on RPL, at the time when it is convenient.
Thank you very much. Thank you for all carbon.
One omission that I did make, I have with me my Deputy Executive Officer, Joe Samuel, and I just want to express thanks to him for, you know, making sure that all the documents are here and we have it. And I think that part of the success at SACWIP is that we've got a good team with succession planning. I've been at SACWIP 11 years, and we have a very strong deputy. I'm the longest serving executive officer of a qualifications authority worldwide, but they don't last long because there's too many conflicts and problems and difficulties, and we've done well, and we have made sure that at SACWIP there is a good succession plan, and hopefully next year I will still be around, but Joe will then do the presentation because he is quite capable of doing it. Thank you, Chair.
Talking of succession plan,
that is true.
Thank you and good morning, Prof. Mayatula, yes, and honorable members. My name is Jeremy Thomas. I'm the acting CEO of Umalusi. During the time that Dr. Feliwe Lolwana is on sabbatical in the United States, we are expecting her back sometime in December. On my left, I have with me our Chief Operating Officer, Mrs. Eugene Ravi, who will, together with me, make this presentation today. And we really want to thank the committee for the opportunity to present our annual report. However, the first issue I'd like to state is the fact that we believe that our annual report got missing within the parliamentary building when it was delivered at the end of August, but they managed to find it about 2 to 3 weeks ago. So I sincerely hope that the members have had time to go through the annual report, and we have brought a few copies along with us so that you could follow us. The overview of the presentation, then we will look at the introduction, which I've just done, look at our vision, mission and goals as a means of just reflecting again on Umalusi's intended purpose. We will look at the organization's key result area, as well as the financial performance, the departmental grant, and then we'll make our concluding remarks. As you know, Umalusi's mandate lies in the Gentechqua Act to establish a quality assurance body to ensure that continuous enhancement of quality is achieved in the delivery and outcome of the general and third education and training sectors of the national system. Also to develop a quality assurance framework for the GFET bands of the NQF, as well as to regulate the relationship between the National Department of Education, SACWA, and other EQA bodies, providers, and the council. The vision and mission of the Umalusi Council and staff are committed to a vision of continuous improvement of quality and standards in general and third education and training, and a mission that obligates us as experts and leaders in the sector to promote quality and secure standards by confirming firstly that assessments are fair, valid and reliable, quality assuring the provision of education, training and assessment providers, monitoring the adequacy and suitability of curriculum and qualification so that we are able to issue learners with certificates that are credible. Umalusi's goals are to promote quality and appropriate standards, to assure quality and standards through quality assurance of assessment, the monitoring of qualifications and curriculum, and the quality assurance of providers. To develop in-depth knowledge and expertise in areas of our mandate, issue appropriate and credible certificates of learner achievement in terms of specific qualifications and subjects, provide reliable and credible leadership and guidance in quality management and the assurance of standards, to ensure financial efficiency and sustainability of the organization, and then to determine expectations and appropriate response to these within the parameters of Umalusi's mandate. Our purpose, therefore, we can capture within seven key result areas, and they come from our strategic plan of the last, or our business plan for the last year. Our first result area is to improve and maintain the system of for quality assuring assessment for certification. Number two, the establishing and implementing of a system for evaluation and accreditation of providers, and my colleague will speak to that a little bit later. Establishing and maintaining a system to certify and quality assure qualifications and curriculum. Number four, developing and implementing a system for research and development, because we do believe at Umalusi that whatever we do needs to be informed by research. Number five, developing and maintaining management support structures and governance, which is required by the PFMA and the regulations. Ensuring that information technology systems are established, maintained and improved. And lastly, that human finance and all resources and administrative support is maintained and improved. And it's in that, those key result areas that we now wish to report. The format of our report will be given in line with the presentation made to this committee previously, so that we can kind of follow on from where we presented the last time. So I then hand over to our Chief Operating Officer, Mrs. Bravo. Thank you.
Thank you very much. So I'm the person who has to make sure that this all happens. So I'm going to speak first of all to the qualifications assessment, and that speaks specifically to the qualifications you certified. Those being the senior certificate, the GEPC for adults, and of course the qualifications offered at the what used to be technical colleges, the SEC colleges, which are the end courses currently being phased out. So in terms of quality assurance assessment, during the last financial year, the senior certificate externally moderated with 2,644 papers. Those were 66 subjects in provincial papers and 11 national papers. We also quality assured grade 11 exemplars, which were a preparation for the new national senior certificate, which is going to be, which will occur in 2008. So they were setting up exemplars for grade 11. We quality assured those. In the ABET area, we quality assured 51 papers in 23 learning areas. and in the N1 to N3, 51 cases. In the technical certificates, we only externally moderate a sample of the most of the highest enrollment figure, the subject with highest enrollment. In terms of moderation of marking, which is a critical stage, in fact, in the area of standard testing, because if the marking is poor, it means the standards compromised. In the senior certificate, we did in all 11 national papers, 12 provincial papers, and 2 from the IED. In ABIC, 5 learning areas across 10 assessment bodies, 3 in each. So in other words, we cover all the subjects nationally, but not necessarily within each assessment body. And then from N1 to N3, a sample of 23 cases, the marking of that was moderate. In terms of continuous assessment, which is the site-based assessment that occurs in the school or on the premises of the provider, we looked at 11 national subjects and 2 of the IEDs. And added 5 learning areas and N1 to N3, 51 subjects. For that, we also developed guidelines in assessment, and we completed the continuous assessment as per plan. So perhaps we should just say this as well, that when Umaluti externally moderates either continuous assessment or particularly continuous assessment, it is a sample because the department is already moderating that at a different level as well. So it's moderated twice. In terms of monitoring the conduct of exams, in the senior certificate, 114 sites were monitored. And again, we have 3 levels of monitoring. We have the province monitors, the national department monitors, the delivery of the actual exam, and the Umaluti monitors. And we base our plan on their plan, so that we don't overlap. So in a sense, the 3 plans together cover quite a wide spectrum of monitoring. The same for the ABIC, 44 sites were monitored. And N1 to N3, 88 sites were monitored in terms of conduct examination. Our report was submitted to the Minister in January-February 2006 on the conduct of these exams. Unfortunately, we only have 1 set of those reports, and we've made them available to the Chair. We can offer them to you by email, but unfortunately, Gav is not out. In terms of continued quality assurance assessment, the moderation of the continuous pulse for assessments that are conducted nationally at grade nine level annually, we moderated those cases or tasks over across 18 learning areas and with the IED across 10 learning areas. In terms of the standardization in 2006, the senior certificate is with 2,460 subjects are standardized. In 1 to N3, 483 subjects were standardized, but they have 3 exams a year, so that's done 3 times a year. And the average 23 learning areas twice a year through examination. So we kept busy throughout the year in terms of the standardization. Currently, Umaluti is monitoring the administration of the examinations as we sit here today. We are also moderating the continuous assessment at the moment. So far, perhaps I can just say that the matric exams are going well. They haven't written many papers, only 2 or 3 of the national papers have been written, and a few of the provincial ones. Where there have been small problems, they've been technical in nature, as in power outages, for instance, which has been a problem, and a few things like that, but there's been nothing major that's occurred that would, to date, compromise the integrity of these current examinations. In terms of the accreditation and monitoring of private providers, provisional accreditation and monitoring, Umaluti has provisionally to date accredited 781 independent schools, and during May of 2006 monitored 432 of those. The difference in figures there accounts for the fact that they monitored a year later after they become accredited. So the difference indicates that in that year we had a certain amount of growth. In terms of private equity colleges, 82 colleges with 337 campuses. We look at every campus, we don't just look at the provider head office. Also, we commenced with the processing of 216 teacher providers for registration to the Department of Education. Providers accredited by teachers are required to also seek accreditation from Umaluti in order to be registered by the Department of Education. And then 178 ABIC centres, many of which are emerging providers. In other words, they're first-time providers, they're small, they sometimes are just one-man shows. You will notice there's a huge difference between the number monitored and the number of predators. And that is actually a problem, because we've actually found that of the 178, very few are actually practicing. So they'll seek accreditation to get a contract. They may get the contract, and then once the contract's over, they don't continue to practice. And that would account for some of the difference there. We have followed that up with site visits to verify what is actually going on, and we will report on that in our next financial year. Perhaps I can just speak very briefly to the issue of bogus colleges here that was raised earlier. It is primarily the responsibility of the Department of Education through the registration process to provide a register of those. But of course, it's extremely difficult to unearth these colleges, because only the ones that are good identify themselves. So you have to actually have a strategy of unearthing the ones that are not identifying themselves. And I do believe the department is doing that. However, Umaliki has also been conducting site visits, and what we do is when we visit good colleges, we always ask, do you know of any other colleges in this area that you think should not, you know, are not registered or are not accredited? They kind of tell on each other, which is maybe an unfortunate thing to do, but that way we've been able to collect a list of some of these. And we're able to now perhaps act on those and provide that list to the department. So I do think that we do need a sort of a concerted and organized strategy to unearth them. Perhaps more specifically to speak to the nursing college that you spoke about. Nursing colleges fall under the South African Nursing Council, which is a statutory body in its own right, and those, the quality assurance of those would lie there. So because there are so many quality assurance bodies, it also makes it very difficult to coordinate that. Perhaps just to kind of speak to that. Okay, turn to accreditation and monitoring of private providers. During 2006-2007, we visited 87 independent schools. The report is in your pack. We visited 22 public SET colleges to look at their state of readiness in terms of the new qualification they're going to be offering, the NCD, and various accreditation policy documents were resubmitted to the Minister for approval in terms of our criteria. The SET colleges, private SET colleges and other centres were site visited in this financial year, so you'll get a report on that in the next round. In terms of assessment bodies, because Umaliki also appeared as assessment bodies, three new applicants have been supported through a development program. Two of them are ABIS assessment bodies. Because currently the IEB is the only accredited body to actually assess ABIS. And there's a huge demand for that kind of assessment. So we are developing two others to get to a point where we feel that the assessments are credible, and one body that had applied for vocational qualification. The VCO was granted provisional accreditation until September 2007. It was a very short period from November to September. We terminated this in September because the existing senior certificate expires at the end of the year. And the new cycle for the new senior certificate began in September of this year. So that we needed to re-look at the private assessment bodies in order to see whether they would, you know, be provisionally accredited for the next and new contract. Nine provincial departments and the IED were monitored against improvement plans, which came as a result of our evaluation of the assessment system in 2005, and also policy documents were submitted to the departments for approval. In terms of qualifications, curriculum, and certification, perhaps just to say that this unit, not the certification component, but the qualification and curriculum component, was only established during 2006. So it was very new. And during the 6 months of that financial year that it existed, we developed internal documents around frameworks for quality assurance of qualifications and curriculum, and criteria and guidelines to support those. We also piloted those guidelines in terms of senior civic history and biology in order to see how we work with those. In terms of certificates, a senior certificate, 506,000 were issued last year. In terms of GCC ABIT, 1,837 certificates, N3, 18,000 certificates, National Senior Certificate Vocational, 2,700 certificates. We also developed general guidelines and directives in respect to those certificates. In terms of our verification services, which has actually become quite a strong income stream for the military, we verified 149,000 matric certificates last year. In fact, this year it's doubled, tripled, in fact. In terms of research and development, we've even got a small but quite cutting-edge research section. It has like two people in it, but they work very hard, and they do a research to inform our work and primarily to inform our strategic plans. Last year, they completed a report called Apples and Oranges, which was a comparison between school and college subjects that reported included in the pack. They began a comparative study of syllabuses and exam systems and standards in the senior certificate with equivalents in Ghana, Kenya, and Zambia. And that report is due at the end of this month. It's been a very big study. So if you're interested, that report will be on our website shortly. They also began two studies. One was the correlation between continuous assessment and examination marks, because quite often, in fact, there's a large discrepancy between those, and we would be conducting research on that, as well as research on item response theory, which is looking at the analysis of individual exam questions and how that affects the standards. We completed a research project into the fundamentals that is also included in your pack, which is the fundamental component of the qualifications, generally language and mathematics, and the standards in general across the system. And then finally, we hosted a SADC assessment conference, the theme of which was assessment and educational standards. Very successfully conducted, and we had attendance from all over Africa and various other European countries as well. Perhaps I should just raise here the point of public provision, because that has been pretty much what we've spoken about to this committee on the last two occasions that we came here, when the committee asked Umalusi to explain what its role was in public provision. And perhaps just suffice to say that since our last meeting, we have met twice, first of all with the minister, and secondly with the Director General of Education, to discuss Umalusi's future role in terms of public provision, particularly in the light of the changing N2F organization and the new role that Umalusi will get. So that is very much high on the agenda with the Department of Education, here we need to know, and hopefully we will sort that up in the near future. We have further meetings scheduled with them, so it does seem as if our role will now be clarified around the issue of public provision. I think that takes me to the end of the sort of national operations report. Mr. Thomas will take over in terms of the management and support.
Thank you. Prof. Maitula and committee, may I just add from where I ended off from earlier to indicate that Professor John Bowman, the chairperson of our council, has offered his apologies that he couldn't be here today. He had intended to make it, but unfortunately he had other conference commitments that he had to attend to. When we look at our key result areas, and one of them has been the management support structures, for the year April 2006, we've coordinated the organization's planning, the implementation and review of plans, and supported the office of the CEO and the council and all its statutory committees, like the audit committee, the assessment committee, the statistics committee, and the like, as well as implemented a public relations program, and we hosted our first AGM last year during the month of September. When it comes to the development of our IT and certification systems, you'll see the quantifiable, the numbers on the left-hand side and what we've actually achieved on the right in terms of our comments. We were able to install all our hardware and our software and ensure that our licensing was up to date. And the greatest challenge around our IT and certification systems are around the management information system development, which seems to be an ongoing, growing animal that needs a whole lot of input and discussion, because units are looking at the integration of tasks and the processes within each and every unit of the organization. The next challenge within programming is around the certification, and I'd like to letter to the committee that our certification programming for the new NCV National Certificate in Vocational Education and the new National Senior Certificate, that is all on track. So we will be able to certificate the learners that write the NCV this year by January next year from the. In terms of our finance, HR and administrative support, Uma Lucy generated a surplus in the year of 2006-07, and the minister and that and the before I think the that surplus approval has been obtained through the Department of Education that surplus be utilized in the operations for this current financial year. We also had the privilege of the minister opening the building that we purchased. We were renting a building in First Secure Techno Park, and we purchased the building for 12.7 million rand. It is valued at this point in time double that and more. And fortunately, the minister was able to open it on August 2007. In terms of our human resources, I think the aspect of development of staff has become very, very critical to us. And this is going to become quite an issue in terms of ensuring that we have sufficient financial resources to meet the needs of staff. And the objective of Uma Lucy has always been to ensure that we don't become another department, but to ensure that our numbers, the numbers of people that we employ, they are able to multitask and do many, many different things. And at this point in time, we've been able to keep our salary bill to around about 40% of the budget, which I believe is quite commendable. In terms of our financial performance for 2006, yes, as you see, we had our revenue, our income amounted to 32 million, of which the Department of Education allocated 10 million, and our expenditure 28, we made a surplus of 4.9. And that 4.9 has become part of the 2007 budget. In terms of our total income since the inception of Uma Lucy, I think this table just tries to show the kind of grant that we've been receiving from the department from the year 2000 to our projections to 2010-11. And you will notice our first grant we received in 2002-03, which amounted to 11% of the budget. The year thereafter is 17%. Then it went up to 55% and went back to 27%. Last year, we received a budget that amounted to 31%, a grant that amounted to 31% of our budget. And this year, we have a grant of 25% of our budget. We already received the figures in terms of the MTES plan and projections for next year, 36%. And the request for 2009 and 2010 is that it goes up to 48 and 52% respectively. The conclusion of this presentation, therefore, challenges facing the organization include the mapping and the integration of all the unit processes to culminate in an effective management information system and a record system. Quality assurance foundations for school, college, and adult education is in place in respect of quality assurance of assessment, curriculum and certification, and the provision thereof. Uma Lucy is therefore ready to engage the Department of Education and the related stakeholders in the improvement of quality in these sectors. The NQF review finalization is welcome. Consultative processes have begun with the Department of Education, the Department of Labor, and its related stakeholders. We'd like to thank the Portfolio Committee and the Chairperson, Dr. Maya Tula, for your continued support. Thank you very much. We'll take questions.
Chairperson, in the first place, thank you so much for getting the presentation. Quite clearly, one of the documents that is important for us to look at and examine is the annual report, as has been indicated by the Department. And going through the annual report,
problem. One has just picked up, though, that in the report of the independent auditors, in this annual report, which is on page 29 of the annual report, page 29 of the annual report, report of the independent auditors, that, you know, there's not quite a, what you can call a qualification, but there is something referred to as the bottom emphasis of the matter, where the auditors are saying, without qualifying our opinion, we draw attention to the disclosure of the PFNA internal control weaknesses and performance information made on page 6 of the council report. Now, if one turns the page and looks at the report of the council on page 31 at the top there, it does say that the council acknowledges internal control weaknesses in the following areas which came to its attention, and that is asset management, revenue management, and reporting on performance information. And the question is, are we satisfied that that Umalusi is here to improve on these internal control weaknesses that I refer to here, you know, as perhaps the only sort of slight blemish on the report here? And I wonder if Mr. Thomas can respond to that.
Yes,
that question is just in Umalusi's issuing of this indicator, you really sometimes maybe come across the problem of having some fake certificate issued in the name of Umalusi. And if this happens, to what extent does it happen? And once Umalusi is willing to try and stop it.
Thank you, Mr. President. As to the audit report, on the statement that you have given us, on this, that you have given to them, on the unqualified audit, you mentioned a consistency of organization. I just want you to be very specific what you mean by the consistency of organization. And on the next page, total income from 2000 to 2010. Could you just give a motivation for this anticipated increment on the grant from 36% 2008-2009 up to 2010-2014? Thank you.
What concerns me is also a concern with protocols and vision and mission. A concern with both quality and certification. Now, when you visit FDT College Association for assurance for quality and certification assurance, which areas do you normally visit? Because my concern has always been this is the last landing site. You know what happens to have these main campuses, but you go further to these landing sites, the standard really is much higher. I would like to know what your observation has been. I know in one province they try to close down some of them, then buy in order to ensure that quality and the standardization. That's one. Two, on standardization, on the metric certification and whatnot. I know universities are autonomous. They will have their own tax. But, you know, they have no difficulty experienced by matriculants, especially those from disadvantaged communities. There they will be subjected to entrance tests at universities, where it means their certificates, though having been through Malu, they always lack this credibility. What can, and I know in this kind of trauma, they have their own test. New reaction here at UCT. The other day was emphasizing that he feels, in fact, universities must rigorously have their own test to assure this quality and standardization. What will be the difference between that and
thank you. I think I'll field the first five questions and Mr. Harvey could answer the rest. To start off with the aspects in terms of the internal control weaknesses, Umalusi found there an explosion of administration and financial controls with the accreditation of providers, and as such Umalusi had to increase its capacity within a short period of time in dealing with debtors, for example, and there are times when you set up a new system that there may be failures in the system which you kind of pick up only after the fact, once something has happened. And therefore, Umalusi, we've now embarked on a process of re-evaluating all our risks and going through a risk assessment review, spanning the whole organization, not only the financial controls, but also the performance management kinds of controls. And looking at our performance management system, so that we could address the issue of the internal control weaknesses as highlighted by the auditor. And the fact that it is mentioned in the annual report by both the auditors and the council, which is the accounting, the controlling board, it is the fact that Umalusi wants to ensure that we deal with this matter and do not necessarily just ensure that it does not appear in the report at all, so that we can monitor and ensure that it is eliminated completely, and in areas where we can't eliminate it completely, at least then able to manage it significantly enough. And I hope I can have addressed that issue. In terms of certification and fraudulent matric certificates, The one comfort that I've discovered, and I've been at Umalusi for the past 6 years in the post of the Chief Financial Officer, and that I've experienced is that I've never come across an Umalusi fraudulent certificate. I've never come across a Umalusi certificate that has been manufactured by imprinting company. And the reason for that is because we have several security features on the Umalusi, on the matric certificate itself, that we know will kind of cancel most printing companies in South Africa because they will not be able to fraudulently produce that. But Umalusi does come across both individuals who present fake copies of certificates, or where they have a copy of a certificate that has been manipulated, and then that company would approach Umalusi and say, could you kindly verify this for us? And we've discovered over the past year that about 4% of the certificates that we have asked to verify are fraudulent in some way. Either the candidate manipulated the percentage mark, or the name has been manipulated, or the ID number has been manipulated, but it's been manipulated on a copy, not on an original certificate. So, Umalusi, we've done our best to try and prevent fraudulent copies of matric certificates going around. We also provide the South African police services on a regular basis the names of those people, certificates whom we come across are fraudulent. And the reason is because fraud is a crime, and the SAP wants to know that. So we provide that information to them. However, there are HR companies like Crow MIE, for example, that publish that fraudulent certificates are in the region of about 16%, but that crosses the spectrum of general and further education up to tertiary education. The third question was around the history. The Honourable Member asked me in terms of this, and I assume it is this slide. What I meant was, if we look at the inception when Umalusi started as a public entity, in terms of its income, what percentage of its income was derived directly from the Department of Education in the form of a grant, so that the Honourable Members could see how the grant has improved, and the fact that there is no particular amount or what we call a kind of funding formula that has been determined, so that Umalusi knows over the next 3 to 4 or 5 years what it's going to receive. And those are the kind of issues that make planning a little bit difficult for us, yes. But fortunately, we are in regular engagement with the department on this issue. As far as the grant is concerned for 2009 and 10 and 2010 and 11, those are forecasts that we provided to the Department of Education and requests to say for 2009, we would like you to fund us at least 22.4 million and 27.8 million respectively, because that's the way we see our operations are going to grow. And bearing in mind that those operations are outside of what is probably mentioned or definitely mentioned in the NQF review. So there is an arrangement or in discussions with the department that where the QCs, the quality councils, are going to obtain new mandates, the department will ensure that there is new funding for those mandates. The last question I'm going to talk about is the targets and the plans. The Honourable Member asked the question in terms of our presentation. The quantities in our presentation between April 2006 and 2007, those were part of our operational plan for the year April 2006 to April to March 2007. And our comments therefore reflect that that is in fact what we achieved in 2006 or 2007, and we met what we had planned. If you look at the annual report in turn, you will see that the comments are very, very similar. At our previous presentation to this committee, we presented what our plans were for 2006 or 2007 or 2008. And so at our next session, we will be reporting on what we've achieved during this financial year. So that is exactly what we had planned, and we had completed in 2016.
Okay, one question was around where the Abbey spaces, 178 Abbey spaces, were situated. Look, I can't confirm this absolutely. The confirmation of this will come through now after our site visit. But what we have found over a period of time is that the NGO sector in the Abbey area has decreased substantially. There's very few NGOs operating in rural areas around adult basic education training. Very few of them left. It used to be an enormous sector within that provision area, but there's very few that are non-profit making that remain. Okay? The majority are profit making, and it's come about mainly through the tenders that are put out to industry asking for avid providers. And so you find that almost everyone who thinks who's got an avid certificate to teach avid now wants to be an accredited provider, so they would be eligible for a tender and to get a contract in the industry. So probably the majority of those are one-man shows waiting to get a tender, to win a tender. And so what we've now got is we've got a two-tier system in a way. We've got a system for emerging providers, which is slightly different from those that are established. The emerging ones we kind of take under our wing and see if we can develop them, because our system is developmental in nature, particularly in the beginning. But we have set time limits on it. If they don't have a contract within a certain time, then we can't continue to keep that provision of accreditation in place. So I hope that answers your question. In terms of the site visits and standardization, yes, there are huge discrepancies between campuses. You'll find that the head office and probably your city campuses are reasonable, but the minute you go into the rural areas, your campuses are poor. In terms of the public education provision, of course, we've written a report to the Department of Education around this. We've visited an additional 12 now, so we'll be putting a consolidated report to the National Department around this. And there are massive discrepancies, and there are some that are very ready for the ECU, and there are some that are not ready at all. So yes, it is a problem. However, in terms of private provision, well, and public provision, Maluku has a developmental sort of approach. We don't like to turn away a provider. The fact that they've identified themselves to us already says they want to be in the loop. So in a sense, you have to take them forward then. You can't just say, well, go away. We can't do anything about you. So we are in the next round particularly going to be focusing on developing, particularly in the schooling area, those emerging providers that we think need help and that are not at this stage using outside areas. But yes, it's a massive problem. There are huge discrepancies between very, very good and very poor. In terms of matric, the credibility of the matric certificate and entrance into universities, we have had talks with FISA recently around this. The FISA is working on a system. They're currently working on these entrance requirements. And we've been working quite closely with them. And I guess it's more a systemic thing. It's not something that's going to be fixed, in a flash. Because as our system, our system has basically been looking at greater access. We've now got 95% of children going to school. And we now need to focus on quality access. And I think it is going to take a bit of time, because it's in different areas of the quality is one thing. I mean, we quality assured exam paper, and we know that those papers are on standard, whatever that means. But compared to past standards, they're still of a standard. The standards haven't got the papers. The exams are being carried out very credibly. There's no major compromises in the system. But where you do find the compromises are in the market. There's problems in the area of the market. And that's quite difficult to monitor. If you are monitoring millions of papers, the marking approach. Tricky one. The other one is continuous assessment on the site of the actual school, and that speaks to the capacity of the teachers. So in a sense, this is a cyclical thing, and it speaks to the capacity of teachers and to assessors and to all of those things that lead to the credibility of the certificate. So it is systemic development really that you're speaking of, and that takes time. That's the only real answer I can give.
I'm happy that Marlos is aware of what has happened and just discovered the inequality between the Islam side. But now it's a really a story side to say that thousands and thousands of youngsters are going through this side of poor quality with no hope of getting employed, but they still go through this as we talk. You know, I wish in your vision and mission for quality and preservation, something could be done very, I know I agree that it's difficult, but really something must be done. We can't have seen these thousands and thousands of people going through these rural, so-called refugee colleges, which have no quality at all. So I really don't think of I know it's not your primary responsibility, these guys, the Department of Education, to consider the department.
Maybe my conclusion is related to faith. I think that's just our own mind. The letter of this group, so I didn't know that there are these faithfuls that can't find it for me, but not doing whatever I'm supposed to do. Because policy wise, these are the policy wins, you know. The size are not good. But that doesn't mean one party. If they have means, it means all of us. If we could have helped those on the face, at this age, nothing is happening there. I think we do have that responsibility to show. And I think there is a process required from where we are. You see, I think it's an example for the sake of it.
That's what I thought very good. Yes. How about this?
Thank you, Chair. Well, we are now on the face of quality education. So much as she always did, as well as that of access, quite simply, big talk.
Can you
speak
your mic?
Oh. As a side visit, you have noticed that you sampled the state of affairs in 9 provincial education provincial institutes, let me say public. I'll keep this thing off independent, not because I don't care for it, but at least many of them are located in public schools. Now, on the right there, you have recorded monitoring report that has been submitted to council. Can you just tell us briefly whether the situation is improving? Because in many cases when you do oversight visits, things like that, to put it mildly, painfully wrong. I would say painfully wrong because it's happy. Now, related to this thing is the issue of this study as we test correlation study, with actual performance of the kids at the end of the year. I find it extremely attractive because it then reflects the quality of teaching by the teachers and indirectly the quality of the teacher and of the kids by the time he reaches grade 12, given the fact that quite a significant percentage of the total marks, I think it's about 20%, that's what I'm saying, contribute towards the aggregate, and 20% is quite a lot. We can't have situation now. They have to do that combination. And if then you find that the correlation now is not as good as it should be, do you put recommendations to the department in specific terms what should be done?
On page 12 of this one here,
institute is just a design to ask my colleagues to ask me to know that. They're actually VCDO. What are you saying? And that was very sharp. The very next column there, CDS and IED, if you could see that system there. And then finally, just to appreciate the fact that, you know, mention was made of the fact that you had an interaction with this person. I want to express the hope that finally we'll be informed about the outcome, finally, of this interaction between Mumalusi and the department, because it was quite a dicey one the last time we were. Thank you very much.
We have two comments. I don't know if this falls on your feet on the department, but you said this is not telling on each other. We have it. I think we are interested to know from the staff as members now, because some of these things are now concerned. So that if you could get a list of the institutions that met our feet on the ground, I'm sure we would appreciate that. On the cash one, I'm not curious to know the effect of the transfer as far as cash.
Perhaps I should just clarify the abbreviation. VCDO stands for the vehicle for Fox A or Nova. The vehicle for Christopher Fox A or Nova. It's a very small assessment body that normally is found in the system when it is established. It was part of the SAS system and came forward in time around that. And they have about 60 schools. Christian-based schools, and they have an assessment body that assesses the work. I'm trying to say that. It's a touchy, sensitive issue. Very small numbers, only about 200 participants in a year for the CDO at the moment. CDE stands for Provincial Department of Education. And the IED stands for Independent Examination Board. They set the matric exam as well, private bonds set the matric exam. In terms of provincial improvement, yes, they are improving, we're delighted to say. Some of the provinces, in fact, the assessment system was like hugely understaffed, for instance, and we've seen a lot of that change. Quite a lot of the recommendations we made in the 2005 recommendations have been followed through on. So we're quite pleased with that. Yeah. We could give you specifically that report if you would want it. We could let you have it. But,
all the officers are represented in sample.
Sorry?
I can only hope it was represented in sample.
Well, it's all the provinces. So we did everybody. It was 100% sample. Yeah. In terms of standardization and the correlations and whether we make recommendations to the Department of Education, yes, we do. Annually, we make recommendations to the Department of Education. Whether the department takes those up, of course, is not a matter. But there are substantial recommendations made to the Department of Education.
What is it?
The interaction between the Department of Education and Maliki has to say that we met with the minister, I think it was the 6th of August, and we spoke briefly. Look, it was a very sensitive issue at the last presentation. We didn't speak to each other for a while. However, Dr. Lawana patched our relationship. We are speaking to each other. And we had a meeting with the minister, and the director general came along to the meeting, and breaches have been healed. And she indicated what she thought might be Imolusi's role, but just in general lines. But now with NTF review having been settled, it does, you know, it starts to shift things a little. Subsequently, we've met with the Director General again and spoken around this, and we've been invited to present a document on what we feel Imolusi, how Imolusi would fit in and how we would want the legislation to change in order to facilitate our role more. And so that's the point at which we stand now. And we will be developing that document and taking it to our council in November, and then it will be discussed with the Minister's office around that. And then around the teacher's strike. Yes. Look, at the moment we're sort of just waiting to see what the results will be, because we're hoping that the intervention put there by the Department of Education at quite large cost will suffice and will minimize the impact. It's very hard to predict what the impact will be. But obviously that will come out in the standardization. We are asking provincial departments to come and present intervention recovery plans and other interventions that they might have had in their provinces now at the end of October. They're presenting us with what they've done in terms of that. So that we have a good sense of that before we go into the standardization.
Have you already interacted with the provincial department on the already in the provincial department, they say 64,000 learners will fail matric. So they are already putting in place plans to accommodate them. Do they take this from your standardization guideline or what? Do you have any role to play in that too?
I think it's just statistically a kind of a prediction based on statistics, possibly. I don't know where that figure comes from. I mean, they haven't communicated
yes,
it.
Yes,
so
it's based on the past.
Yeah. So it would be based on, let's say, last year's statistical moderation. Yes, they will have to put plans in place for those failures because, of course, the senior certificate is being phased out. So they need to be able to create every opportunity for learners who want to finally write their old matric to write it. And so they will have to put
hands
in place for that.
But may I add to the Prof. Umalusi is in no way engaged in that kind of discussion or debate, because our role is to standardize the actual marks at the time when the marks get made available, and that can only be done after the candidates have written the examination. So even though the department may have to consider it, it's in no way a discussion between ourselves and the department.
On your recommendations to the department, which they can take or not, because they have to decide on that, how open are those recommendations? It's hard to tell the group for anything that is as good as the thing to learn along the ground. Where do we get those recommendations? Are they under cover?
They're in the report, so that's with you there at the moment. You're the only one who's got a seat for those, though.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I don't see any questions or comments. Thank you very much. I think we really have to appreciate it.
Sorry, Madam, we don't have the check, only the process.
We only had one check left, they've all been handed out. So we've made those available to the professor, and that's the report on the matric exam for last year. The rest of them we've got, we've got it.
I think that's the end of this. As a Wednesday, as members of the committee, we are invited to be part of that. I think it's 96. He said, take him in his lot for 12 of his feet. So I think it's like I will say to the part of a mind member, so that all who can on Wednesday next week can be part of that. That's it. I'm going to go grab singles, they still are not outside. If the management comes, you can meet us for one.
That's fine.